is Susan D. Brock, Tell You Right Inside and Out, speaking with the iconic Bill Payne of the band Little Feat. Little Feat and Phil Lesh, Government Mule, and the B-52s are their headliners for the upcoming Telluride Blues and Brews Festival, Friday, September 14th through Sunday, September 16th. Bill, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to join me.
Susan, an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So, were you destined by birth for a career in music, or did that track evolve over time?
Well, you know, a great question. I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest. In looking back at it, I would say it was destined at the time. I wasn't so sure, because I loved rock and roll. My sister is 9 years older than me, Anne, who was listening to Elvis Presley when I was a little kid. But I was studying classical music, etc. So, but also being encouraged to play by ear, which is a dual track. So I was set up from the very get-go to have a career in music. And perhaps the most telling part of it was when I was in either seventh or eighth grade, the woodshop teacher said, "Look, I'll give you a passing grade. Stay away from the saws."
Okay, perfect. Are you a self-taught keyboardist, or did you receive any formal training once you decided that, you know, making things in shop was not for you?
Well, I had a wonderful teacher, Ruth Newman, who I took lessons from approximately the age of 5 through 15, at which point Ruth suffered a heart attack. This was in Ventura, California. The literature that I learned as a classical musician was from the Romantic era, lots of Beethoven, etc. But as I had said previously, Ruth Newman had allowed me a track to play by ear as well. And she did this, quote-unquote, told my mother, "We'll make sure Bill knows how to read music, but let's not take the magic out of it for him." That was almost unheard of back in the 50s.
Wonderful. You were very lucky then.
I sure was.
Very lucky.
And still am.
Yes, I was going to say, and continue to be very lucky with
you. Yes, very much so.
How did your career evolve? And in talking about that, please discuss some of your favorite and legendary musicians you've worked with as a sideman.
Well, I think to start off with, it was when I started off in a band. I was 15 years of age. I just lost my piano teacher. I wasn't a very happy kid. And my parents said, "Oh, there's some people up in Santa Maria. Their son is forming a band. Why don't you try out for it?" So I'll tell you how loose and unaffected I was by all this. I actually auditioned to play drums. And they happened to have a piano up against one of the walls. And I maneuvered over there and started playing it sort of in a mindless fashion. They go, "You play the keyboards?" I go, "Yes." And they go, "Well, forget this band. We got a band down the street. It's called the Debonairs. We're going to start that." I think every step of the way I kind of went into this with, yeah, I know how to play keyboards, but it was working in much later when I was in Los Angeles working with the Doobie Brothers. There was a particular lick that I played on one of their songs. And I said, "Look, I was just goofing around, guys. Let's not keep this particular lick." No, we want it. I actually went to the control room and spoke to Ted Templeman, who was the producer, Don Landy, the engineer, and Tommy Johnson from the Doobie Brothers, who wrote the song, and said, "Look, I really don't want that lick in there. When I was a kid, I used to play a little Chinese song. I'd get a standing ovation going to the keyboard, standing ovation going back to my seat, and then I'd go out to the playground and get beat up like everybody else." And 24 years later, Tommy Johnson called me, and he says, "Remember that lick you didn't like?" I go, "Yes." He says, "Well, as a result of that story you told and the lick that you played, I went home that evening and called that song China Grove." So I've got a lot of stories like that, Susan. The people I've had the pleasure of working with outside of Little Feat, James Taylor, Linda Ronstadt, Randy Newman, Carly Simon, Bob Seger, It is a really, really, really long list, and I've been very privileged to be able to do that. Jimmy Buffett recently, and gosh, I don't know. It just goes on and on.
Jimmy Buffett was an early supporter of Little Feet, right?
He sure was, and I worked with Jimmy for about 3.5 years. It was an album called License to Chill, which was a huge record for him.
Yep.
It had a lot of country artists on it. And Michael Utley, in terms of a career that as a studio musician, just segregating it to that, Michael and I used to do a lot of session work with each other. He graciously allowed me to play the piano, and he played the B3 on that record. And I was in a room with about 8 or 9 people. We cranked out these songs in about 4 days. It was just a really, really fine experience. And I told Jimmy, I said, I think you got a hit record on your hands here. And sure enough, he did. So it was kind of a fun deal.
How did you, let's really pull it back to Little Feet now. How did you connect with Lowell George to form Little Feet back in 1969? What is the true story of the history of the band? There are several versions all over the internet, versions I've heard. What's the true story?
Well, I was taking a foray up to Northern California, which wasn't a disaster, but I didn't really find anything up there. I was too shy to actually get into a band and live in a place that I would have much preferred to live. At about that time, which, as you said, was in 1969, I heard a record of Frank Zappa's called Uncle Meat. And I listened to it, and it was a double LP, and maybe even more than that, I can't remember, but it just had this wonderful instrumental music, some great lyrics, at least at the time I thought so, and I really wanted to be in the Mothers. So I was back down in Southern California, just at the edge of it in Santa Barbara, Isla Vista, actually, which is north of Santa Barbara, attached to UCSB. And somebody gave me a phony calling card that I could dial up anywhere I wanted and not have to pay for it. So I did that, and I had two choices. One was Straight Records, and the other was Bizarre Records. Both Frank Zappa labels. I called Bizarre. And I had to introduce myself as some kid sleeping on the beach, living in people's apartments up in the Santa Barbara area, and eventually through the grace of God or the grace of this woman I was talking to, she put me in touch, not initially, but the second time I got it all sorted out, having gone to Los Angeles once to speak with Jeffrey Simmons from a group called Eureka, I was introduced to Lowell George, at which point I set up an appointment, drove down to see him, and when I got to his house, there was a young lady sitting on the floor listening to some Eric Satie. And I said, you must be Bill. Come on in. He'll be back in about 4 or 5 hours. So I'm thinking, okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm talking to her. I'm looking at his record collection, which has Ohm by John Coltrane. It's got the blues and fields Field Workers compilation from the Smithsonian Institute. There's a record of Lenny Bruce is in there that Frank Zappa produced. There's Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, etc. A very eclectic collection of music. Books, same thing, Howl by Allen Ginsberg. He had, some other poetry books scattered throughout. On his wall, he had a samurai sword. To the right of that, and down on nestled against the back wall was a sitar. By the time Lowell got there, I kind of felt I knew him, and we much like a conversation or the first time Che Guevara and Fidel Castro met. They talked about everything under the sun and moon, and so did Lowell and I. It was a very good beginning to what a few weeks later turned into the beginning of Little Feet. It didn't start immediately from that meeting, I still wanted to meet Frank Zappa, but by the time I actually did Susan, it was a fait accompli. I had pretty much made the decision to join a band with Lowell George.
Okay. And that band has had many incarnations. It was the Lowell George years. It was the Craig, I think they ended in 1979, the Craig Fuller years, which ended around 93, the Sean Murphy years, which ended in 2009, and this incarnation. So talk about anything you'd like with regard to these different incarnations, but let's focus on the present.
Well, I think that, well, well put, actually. Every incarnation that has happened in this band, of which, as you said, there's, I believe, three or four, they've all led to the present, which is Rooster Rag, which is Fred Tackett, who's been in the band since around 88, I think, when he joined us for Let It Roll. Fred Tackett was there the first year in the Lowell George era. He's the first guy that got us a paying gig with Jimmy Webb, whom he was playing guitar with. And this was over in Encino, California. Paul Brer was out of that first year in 1969. He was our bass player, or well, he actually auditioned out of 20 people to play bass. He was one of them.
Wow.
And so he had been there from the beginning. Craig Fuller, first gig we did, which was in 1970 technically, because it was Christmas in Cincinnati, Ohio, at a place called the Reflections Club. Richie made a semi-obscene act on stage introducing the band. It was our second night there, and the first night everybody were singing Ohio football songs because they were the Ohio football team was going to the Rose Bowl to play Stanford, and they, as it turned out, they lost that game. But there were about 10 people that saw Richie pull a sausage out of his pants, cut the end of it off, take a bite of it, and go, "Ladies and gentlemen, Little Feet." Nobody, it was as if he was invisible. Nobody saw it, or so we thought. Craig Fuller was there. He saw it. So he was there from the beginning. The only person that in this incarnations that we're talking about, Sean Murphy, she wasn't there, but I had joined a tour in 1986, which preceded putting the band back together, and I had Fred Tackett go out on that tour, and I said, "When we get back off this tour, Fred, I want to put Little Feet back together. Paul Brer and I have discussed it. We're on board. Do you want to join?" He said, "Yes." So we finally had that handshake occur then. Then we come up to some sadder territory, actually, and that involves Richie Hayward. Toward the end of the Sean Murphy had already left the band. Richie was, a couple years later, very ill. We weren't sure what was going to happen to him. And it turned out that he wasn't going to be able to make it back. People were throwing names at me left and right. I said, "Look, if I know who you're talking about, we can't afford them." Let me start with Gabe Ford, who's Richie's drum tech, is what I told everybody. I want to give that guy the shot. He's playing with Robin Ford, and Robin's played on our records too, going back to Gringo, which is right after Lowell passed away, so this was in 1980. I said, "I don't care if you're family or not, you're not getting up on stage with Robin Ford unless you know how to play. The bigger question is how big is his vocabulary?" So we found that out pretty quickly, and thus began the current incarnation. Throughout all of this, Susan, what we've done, and I think the reason it carries forth in a manner that is honest and is completely in focus about our legacy, where we want to go, where we want to go sometimes is a little muddled, but the idea of paying homage to those that have come before us, that's huge in my mind. When you hit the stage, I want to honor Lowell George, I want to honor Richie Hayward, and I want to honor this legacy of music that has done through the auspices of dealing and being with fans, that we all carry sort of a communal message with one another. We have many, many shared values. Doesn't mean we're cut out of the same cloth by any stretch, but we've grown up in exciting times. It's not about age. It's about being inquisitive, and we're very, very fortunate to be able to do this.
Wonderful. Thank you for that.
Sure, thank you.
Your most recent CD is something called Rooster Rag. You co-wrote four of the 12 tracks. So could you talk about that new recording in the context of Little Feat's overall discography?
It's been said not by me, but by many others that have heard this record, that it sounds like Little Feat. And I was over in London the first time I heard that, and I went, well, yeah, it sounds like Little Feat. If we played Happy Birthday, it would sound like Little Feat. What I began to sort out, and a fellow named Bill Flanagan from New York City, he and I were talking about it probably about a week and a half ago. He says, no, I hear you, but he says, what they mean is it sounds like classic Little Feat. I said, you know, Bill, I think you're absolutely right. It does. The way this stuff works, I mean, getting back to the first question about did something happen by design, or, you know, how did all this sort of take place? Is it meeting Robert Hunter was a lot like that. I certainly knew about the Grateful Dead, but I didn't really know Robert Hunter. I knew the songs that he had written. I had a lot of respect for him, but I wasn't a Deadhead, so I wasn't immersed in that culture. So when I finally, the idea was, well, let's get together and have him write some music. He's interested in doing that with you guys. I said, well, yeah, let's give it a try. So he sent some lyrics through, and I happened to salute one in particular that did not make it on the record. But that got us going. I just turned in my 11th song to him the other day. I hadn't written anything in probably 7 years.
Wow.
And so to have 11 songs with Robert Hunter, and this started in 2011, August, July of 2011, somewhere in that time period. We've got an extraordinary run going on right now. Fred Tackett in this band has written four songs that are just really, really great tunes. Church Falling Down is great. I would say that the song, I'm really bad at titles, but it's One Breath at a Time. To me, it almost had that feel of a Paul Brer tune, like Skin It Back, one of the earlier tunes that Paul used to write. Somebody last night I was reading about, they said, well, it's got this another tune that his son actually wrote. It had that kind of funky meters kind of thing going for it. At any rate, these are all the kind of lines of influence that have been with the band for a long time. My writing with Robert Hunter and the way I like to write songs, which is I was afraid of whether I'd be able to do it or not, was the idea of taking people on a journey on almost a cinematic way. I want my music to be as interesting as the lyrics are. And the way we wrote, which is he'd send me something, I'd send it back to him, and we go, let's try something else. And why don't you kickstart it, Bill? Send me the music, this sort of thing. So, yeah, it was a really interesting excursion. I think that it was almost, for me, like getting back to basics. I sat down at the piano. I didn't start off with a synthesizer or a sequencer. I sat at a piano. I did use an iPhone with iTalk to record the little snippets that I was doing so I wouldn't lose track of anything that would lead me to bringing a song to fruition. But I'd read or heard that Paul Simon had done something very similar where he went back to just picking up a guitar and writing a song. He says it was a real revelation to him, and I thought, well, it was to me too. I think there was a lot of getting back to basics on this thing, and it was I was using Richard Manuel's piano, which I've written an article about, which people can find on littlefeat.net. So there we go.
Okay.
I used to say it took me 30 years to get back 30 years.
Right. Well put. That's sort of a needle point. I have to keep that one. What are you looking forward to most about returning to Telluride and Blues and Brews?
Well, I was just there this summer with a group called Leftover Sam and had a wonderful time hanging out with not only those fellas, but some friends that have been going to the Bluegrass Festival for many, many years. We've played the Blues and Brews before. In fact, we were up there with Bobby Ware one time, and I think, I can't remember the fellow's name, but the setting for it, Susan, I mean, I have to tell you, it's just ideal for a creative experience and for a community gathering. What I look forward to is a time there, no fires for Colorado, and just have some pleasant weather for people, and everything else will take care of itself. It's an absolute wonderful place to play, and I always look forward to getting down there.
Thank you very, very much. This has been Susan B. Brock in a comprehensive conversation with the iconic Bill Payne of Little Feet. They are in town for the upcoming Telluride. They will be in town for the upcoming Telluride Blues and Brews Festival that begins Friday, September 14th. Thank you so much for such a wonderful history, Bill.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for the great questions.
You're welcome.